the desire to have that companionship, romance, and intimate connection with humans is alive and well, way into the hundreds. And beyond, is people really want companionship. They want true partnership.
This is a BloomerBoomer.com podcast with host Andy Asher.
So what you just heard are two women who are part of the scene where love and romance is just as normal in retirement communities as, well, anywhere else. Hello, everyone. Our show today is about celebrating Valentine's, and for those of us baby boomers who might wonder sometimes what it holds for us as we age. Now, both ladies are with the Vista Del Monte Retirement Community in Santa Barbara, California. First, Becky Buchanan oversees fitness and wellness, while Laura Mancuso heads the Spiritual Life Program. Peggy and Laura, thanks for joining us. I'll ask you first, Peggy, you must have a bird's eye view on the topic.
I will tell you that romance and the desire to have companionship is alive and well no matter what the age. I believe that older adults are no different than younger adults. It just may get more difficult because connecting with people, driving, eyesight, hearing, and whatnot do offer some obstacles for folks. So it gets a little more difficult, but the desire to have that companionship, romance, and intimate connection with humans is alive and well, way into the hundreds.
So that's great news, knowing that we don't lose those instinctive drives, you might say.
Exactly.
And this is Laura. You know, Peggy and myself, we speak from personal experience as well as our professional experience. I'm in my 50s, Peggy's in her 60s, and our residents here span from 60s all the way to over 100. Very vibrant, very well-educated, very enthusiastic and empowered people. And, you know, we've seen many, many examples of people in our lives and in our work who have come together in every one of those decades from 50 through 90s. And I think the thing that people are looking for is a little bit different than perhaps earlier in life. You know, we're in our 20s. We may be screening potential mates for, you know, is this someone I could raise a family with? Is this someone who will support me in my career? You know, we may have different things on our minds. What I see more in midlife and beyond is people really want companionship. They want true partnership. They probably have a better sense of themselves and what matters to them. And I see a kind of a tension between flexibility and rigidity, because on the one hand, someone is better defined themselves, has a very clear idea of what they want. But they also may be more open and not as much idealized in what they're seeking in a mate.
So, Laura, that sounds like more the laundry list practical side of what people might be looking for later in life, but is the romantic side still there as well?
Absolutely. I think that never goes away. I was thinking about this in preparation for our interview, and something that occurred to me is back when I was about 20 years old, I was in training to be a peer counselor. I was attending Princeton University, and as a college student, I was in training to be a peer counselor. And one of the many seminars that they required us to go to was one by Dr. Deborah Phillips. She was a psychotherapist and sex therapist. She actually just died last year, 2014. And she sought to educate us about intimacy among people that we might not have been previously exposed to. And they educated us about the value of touch and of sexual intimacy and romance among elders as well as among people our own age, to try to open our minds a little bit beyond our own personal experience. And so she had a book out called Sexual Confidence, and she was addressing myths, unlearning sexual myths. And one of the major ones was senior citizens can't, meaning they're not interested in romance or they can't have sexual intimacy. And she was just trying to open all our minds. And I think that we've, as the baby boomer generation has become more numerous, we've probably started, although not completed, but started to become a little bit more aware of that. That that drive to have a romantic attachment to another human being doesn't stop when you're just in your 20s or 30s. It goes throughout your whole life.
And Peggy, you were telling me a little earlier about a woman in her 80s who married shortly after she moved to Vista Del Monte. Can you tell us a little bit about who she married?
The gentleman was married to one of her friends, and the couples were friends for quite some time. And I asked her about getting together with him, and she said, Peggy, it's different in your 80s than in your 20s. And I said, well, why would that be? And help me understand that a little better. And she said, because you go into it in your later life with more of an unlimited desire, knowing you have a limited amount of time. Whereas when you're younger, you go into it with an unlimited desire, knowing you have an unlimited amount of time. And so then I asked her, I said, well, now, did you get close physically? And she said, oh, absolutely. And I said, so that's not something that you just settle that it's never going to happen again? And she said, absolutely not. It's a definite reality. Chemistry is still there. And we both had a glimmer in our eye and a little chuckle. So it's happening everywhere.
You were going to add something, Laura?
Things I want to just add about the couple that Peggy was talking about. They had been longtime friends. They had gone to the same church. Each of them had lost their spouses to death. And so it was after that had happened, they'd been widowed, that they remained friends and then eventually had this romantic attachment develop. So we see a lot of times people have to go through a grief process if they've lost someone, whether it's through divorce or through death. They have to go through a grief process in order to free themselves up emotionally to really be available to a new mate.
So there's going to be an adjustment period whether you're 40, 50, 60, 70, 80 years old. It makes no difference.
If it's too fast, it's like a crutch to try to insulate themselves from the suffering involved in grief. And they really need to just turn toward that grief to find some support for going through it and completing that process as much as possible, coming to a place of peace. And then they are available to really partner with someone in a holistic way.
And I will add to that, I interviewed another couple outside community members to our to our retirement community. I direct the Fitness and Aquatic Center here at Vista, and two of our members, both caregiving their spouses, coming to the Fitness Center for physical therapy, both of them losing their spouses within a year of each other, and I watched their relationship grow from just consoling one another to the loss, because they both recognized they'd been wheeling their partner in a wheelchair. And all of us watching that decline and watching their support of one another during their spouse's decline. And I actually saw the spark light. They started off as console mates, and then I saw their friendship develop, and they would play in the water volleyball games together, laughing and kind of cajoling. And then one day I noticed they left the fitness center hand in hand. And then the next thing I noticed, they're getting married. And I thought, whoa, that was a total full circle, and I got to experience it. And it was just the coolest thing, I think. It just revived my heart in so many directions.
So, Laura, that now brings us to Valentine's Day. And as we all know, it's a highly commercialized event. But at the same time, it's a very personal experience for everyone.
Well, I think people need to make Valentine's Day their own and not let someone else, or someone especially who's trying to profit from the marketing aspects of it, define the holiday for them. Valentine's Day is about love. And we have love in our life in many forms. We can even celebrate love that we may have had in prior decades. Even if it's not with us today, it may still be a great source of comfort. So I think that people need to create rituals for themselves that honors the love that is present in their life, and really wholeheartedly to commit to taking care of themselves and making their life as good as possible so that they can find love in the future.
And I will also add to that that we have kind of a ritual in our family. I lost my father about 8 years ago, and my grandmother, and my grandfather, and my mom and I are together. We live on the same property, And the last couple of Valentine's days, we just create a little shrine where we can see the pictures of all of our loved ones. And I have this funny little habit when I walk on the beach every morning with my dog, I find rocks in the shape of hearts. So we put this little pile of heart rocks and add pictures. And this year we will add the picture of my late puppy, whom I lost at a very young age, and she's going to go on the Valentine shrine.
A lot of different ways to define your own personal Valentine's Day.
That's exactly it. That, as Laura said, that love is all around us and can be celebrated in more ways than just a box of chocolate and a boy or a girlfriend.
And that's certainly true. What I like to do on our podcasts is ask you for some action items, some takeaways that people listening could learn from. Now, we already discussed that Valentine's is a very personal experience, and there's no cookie-cutter approach, so I guess I won't ask how to live Valentine's Day, but maybe to ask you for some pointers on looking for someone special in your life if you don't have that person right now.
I would tell people to first do the work of grieving any past losses. You know, take care of your own internal business, whatever it is you need to do to be fully present to a new relationship. I think also to get involved in activities that you enjoy in your community, whether you live in a retirement community or whatever your local neighborhood or community is. If you're doing things with people that share your interests, then you're likely to find someone that's more compatible with you. A lot of people think about online dating, and you know, I think for the younger generations that may be a more comfortable or natural thing than for someone who's in their 80s and 90s and didn't grow up using computers all the time. It may be part of a multifaceted way of looking for someone to partner with, but I probably wouldn't make it the only thing that you do. And lastly, I think just to tell everyone in your life, if you are really ready to be in a new relationship, let everybody know, because meeting friends through friends is probably, it's the old-fashioned way, but it's probably still the best way.
Mm. And also, start with yourself. Make a list of the things you really like and love about yourself and honor that. And then I think handwritten notes are a thing of the past. There's bound to be someone in your life that you haven't talked to in a while, and send a Valentine. I remember those were some of the fondest memories I have of grade school, when Valentine's Day came around and we got the doilies out and we made Valentines, and we were so excited how many we could make and how many people we could give them to. So I don't think we should underestimate how powerful a handwritten note to a friend, regardless if it's a romantic type of a relationship, Valentine's is about love.
And boy, that's a great way to end the show. So we've been listening to Peggy Buchanan and Laura Mancuso. They are both with the Vista Del Monte Retirement Community. Thanks, Peggy. Thanks, Laura.
And back to you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to our BloomerBoomer.com podcast. We provide transcripts for most of our podcasts, and you can also access all of our podcasts on iTunes. Oh, and we encourage you to leave a comment in the podcast reply section. Thanks again.